And a very good Monday morning to you. It is the next to last day of April 2019. Gosh, time just flies right along. Less than 5 weeks to my birthday, so please send any presents in care of the station on Center Street in Marion. Winning lottery tickets, cash, traveler's checks, new microphones, all appreciated. On the line with me is Dr. Ron Fineman, our official presidentologist, and here to talk about the election and who knows whatever else. Ron, how are you doing on this this fine Monday morning?
I'm doing well, and you're as funny as always.
Well, thanks. We aim to please and also aim never to take myself too seriously. And what would life be if everything was too serious? Of course, since we talked last time, Ron, a not unexpected event took place in the 2020 election. We already have 157 candidates, I believe. More of a question who's not declared.
More like 20, actually.
His or her candidacy, more than a question of who has declared his candidacy. Before we get to the expected person who threw his hat in the ring thrower, whatever you want to call it, let's talk about the town hall meetings on the cable news network, which took place right after our show from last Monday. What did you think about the five candidates who came in front of the CNN microphones?
I think there were varying impressions. I think Pete Buttigieg came across very well. He was at 11 o'clock at night, and to keep me interested at 11 o'clock at night is not that easy because I'm usually almost ready to sleep, but I thought he was quite good. I also thought Amy Klobuchar was quite good, and she was at 7 o'clock, the beginning of the 5 hours. And in between, there was Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and I'm trying to remember who is the other one. I forgot for the moment who the other one was, which maybe is a bad sign.
Kamala Harris.
Do we call who it is?
Kamala Harris.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right. Oh, yes. Yeah, I would not think, my impression was that Kamala Harris did not come across as well, and Bernie Sanders. I think Elizabeth Warren was all right. I think the top three would be Pete and Amy and Elizabeth Warren. I think the other two were not quite as good. And I was shocked by Bernie Sanders, I believe it was on Monday that he said it, that said that he would allow anyone in prison, even people who have murdered or been terrorists, to be able to vote, including the Boston Marathon bomber from like 2013. I think that was shocking and stunning, and that's, I think, preposterous totally. I don't think that makes any sense at all. And I'm not saying maybe people in prison for lesser crimes should be able to vote, but not murder, rape, or terrorism. I'm not sure about even allowing people in prison to vote, but certainly not those kind of crimes.
Kamala Harris seems to like to tell young people exactly what they want to hear, like she's their aunt or something, and her credibility is not too great with me, as you know. Bernie Sanders, well, first of all, he really should comb his hair. I mean, he's 76 years old. He looks 176. He talks with his hands too much.
Actually, he's 77, actually. Yeah, his birthday's in September. He'll be 78 in September. He's actually 77, yeah. But it's true. I think he thinks he's still maybe a teenager who has his hair hanging, yeah.
Yeah, he talks with his hands too much. He's really rather annoying in general. And it's a good time to maybe answer a call to nature or go order a pizza when he's on, unless you want a little bit of comedy. I mean, not really much of a change in my opinion of the guy, but he's in a fantasy world. And we don't just give
One thing I have to say is in June, at the end of June, the beginning of July, we'll see all the candidates, and that's when we can start comparing how they speak and how they look, body language and all that. That's going to be the real telling start, and I don't think we're going to have all 20 in Iowa and caucus in January. I think at least one-third of them, maybe half of them, will drop out before January.
We are speaking with Dr. Ron Fineman, the official presidentologist here at the radio station, WWGH, on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam, which is I, and the professor. Do you think Bernie talks with his hands too much, Ron, like he's trying to hide something? Or am I over-dramatizing? Do you have an impression about his speaking ability, regardless of issues? Let's just not even worry about the issues. Is he a good speaker?
He's very passionate, and he's a person who moves his hands a lot. I mean, some people that way. I don't agree with a lot of things. He goes too far, but I think he's passionate. I think he really believes what he believes. I don't think he's phony in that sense.
Do you think these things could actually happen, though? That's the thing. He feeds young people these lines, and Harris is similar in many ways. She certainly is
not
a better...
Not as much, but yes, somewhat. And I don't think that she's making as good an impression as she might have been at the beginning, yeah. But you know, it always depending on who survives past the first round. You know, sometimes somebody can mess up and then they look better in comparison to who else is left. So it all depends on who's left in the group. And obviously Joe Biden, I think, will be one of the survivors going into the season starting in January.
Many people just seem to think that Bernie is the front runner and he will win hands down. He may have had an early lead because he is the most familiar, but that kind of stuff can change. And we saw
change. I think, you know, that the front runner at this point never has been nominated. Like, Rudy Giuliani was in front at this point in 2007, and we know how far he got. And I'm glad he didn't get further based on how he conducts himself now. My God, he's off the wall. It doesn't mean much when you're ahead right now. I think it all depends on a lot of factors, and those caucus and primary debates starting in June every month, I think, are going to be indicative of who really is going to go further than the end of the year.
Now, there's never been a question about Mayor Pete's passion, his unique demographic, also including being potentially the youngest president ever, as he'll still be in his 30s if he were to win.
39 years and one day old on inauguration day. That's correct.
His intelligence, he plays piano and guitar. He plays with the South Bend Symphony, in fact. I mean, he's a rather accomplished musician, speaks more languages than he has fingers on one hand, has multiple degrees and academic credentials and awards. No question the guy's IQ is well over 100, probably over 150. But there's been a bit of a mystery as to what his stand is on the issues. Do you think that became a little more clear last Monday, exactly how he stands on some of these $1,000 questions that we ask candidates?
Well, my impression is that he's shooting for the center. Maybe not Joe Biden the center, but just a little to the left of center. I don't see him, as far as I could gather, as being a person like a Sanders or a Warren. I don't think so, or even Harris. I think he's more to the center. But, of course, trying to position all these people, of who's to the left or the right of each person, is still very hard to tell. But I think he's shooting for the dramatic middle part of the electorate. I do think that that the religious issue brought up by Franklin Graham, I think, is actually helping him.
I would say I admire someone who says I'm gay and I'm a Christian, like he does. And the God I know
goes to church every week. He's quite religious, actually.
Yeah, the God I know isn't really concerned that Pete's married to a man and that's what his interest is. It's more concerned about the quality of a person. Not to mention his intelligence and his dedication and his honesty. Those are much more Christian qualities to me. And I agree.
Yes.
I think Pete has more Christianity in his middle finger.
Than Franklin Graham, yes.
Than Franklin Graham has in his whole body, as far as I'm concerned. And if that offends somebody, I'm sorry. But I admire Mayor Pete for saying
that. And if you look at Franklin Graham's earlier life, and so he realized, wow, I'm Billy Graham's son. I can make a living being a pastor and not pay taxes. I think, you know, he had a pretty sinful life at an earlier age. He was a wayward son, and I think Billy Graham was not very happy with him. But then he realized, gee, Dad's getting old. Maybe I could take over and really make a business out of this. And that's what a lot of these pastors do, unfortunately. And they get a lot of people following them, and they promote their own...
I really see Pete's stand in religion and his passionate explanation of it to be one of his strong points. And comes across as an honest guy. And, you know, I value intelligence and people that are book smart, as I feel I am, as an important quality. And the issues, again, I've already seen some things where I may not agree with him, but it's nothing that would be a disqualifier. And I have seen things where I do agree with Mayor Pete. So we shall see. At this point, I might very well say he would get my vote, but the election is still a bit off. So,
and what do you think about Amy Klobuchar after watching her last week, if you did watch it?
Good mainstream candidate. Still concerned about what people who worked for her had to say, but they may have had something against her. Who knows what the main issue was. So I'd have no problem with her. We shall see, but I'm not really sure she's a serious contender at this point.
And I know you like Elizabeth Warren somewhat. Do you feel better about her now?
As I said, she's very smart, and she is experienced. She knows the system. She's street smart, which is important. You know, Donald Trump is street smart. It's just other things that he's obviously lacking on. And I do believe she would moderate her views. But some of the stuff, the student loan issue, that's I'm not sure that would actually happen. There certainly are some.
That's the problem. A lot of the promises cannot. The only way it could be accomplished, all these wonderful ideas, which are wonderful on paper, is if we had a very strong Democratic takeover of both houses, where it's like an LBJ Great Society or FDR New Deal Democratic Congress. But I don't think that's going to happen. If it does, then anything is possible. But no, I don't think that's going to be. I don't think we're going back to the 1930s.
I really do. I admire women who are loudmouths and understand they don't care if it's a so-called man's world. I see Warren like that. I don't mind some of the stupid things she says, the Pocahontas comment and some of that stuff. It's kind of funny. And I say she doesn't really take herself too seriously, even though maybe she looks serious. I'm really not sure inside that she is. And that's an attractive quality. So she still is on my list of people that I wouldn't really object to, but I think Mayor Pete may be someone who may be more consistent with the way that I feel. I just like the idea of someone as smart as he is, as I believe he can compensate for his shortcomings in experience and age with his intelligence. I think he finds a way to figure things out, like he learned Norwegian just because of one thing he needed to do. I can see him doing that. But again...
Yes, I want to point out I did an article on the progressive professor, the ultimate age battle looking more likely to occur. Late 70s male Biden or Sanders versus millennial male Buttigieg. I think it could come down to one of those two versus Buttigieg maybe at the end, which could really be weird to have someone who literally is half the age, Buttigieg, of Biden and Sanders. That would be really amazing.
It would be different. Once again, a diverse field of candidates. Well, 10 minutes into the show, we haven't gotten into the topic we said would be the leading one, but I think the town hall was important, so we've addressed that, and I would say 90% Ron and I agree on pretty much what happened. But I'm sure next time we talk, there will be additional events that have occurred and further shape our opinion and prognostications. Well, not surprisingly, Ron, the smeller of hair, Uncle Joe, as he's sometimes called, former vice president, also known as Amtrak Joe, because he would take Amtrak from Delaware to Washington, D.C. He's kind of a regular guy, kind of like your uncle. Uncle Joe Biden has declared his candidacy. That wasn't an unexpected move, just a little bit late, but I guess he was trying to play with our minds a little bit. Maybe he didn't want to be on the CNN debates or town halls. Who knows? But anyway, he has thrown his hat.
From now on, though, he can't avoid picking up.
He has thrown his hat in the ring. And therefore, not surprisingly, has emerged as one of the front runners, as he is certainly the most familiar in general, as he was vice president for 8 years. He's been in government a long time. He's a
36 years in the Senate, 44 years in government altogether. Yep.
Somewhat colorful character, somewhat of a person who says things that are kind of silly from time to time. Again, like the gentleman using the wheelchair that he told to stand up. So he does sometimes say these goofy things, not unlike Warren, but it seems like Biden's a little more lovable in some of the things that he says.
That's what a lot of people I've met who are Republicans and independents say, that they really like Joe Biden, even though he's a Democrat, and they're not. And there are people, I think, independents and Republicans who are not Trump supporters, obviously, who could consider Joe Biden to vote for.
He's someone who's just not really going to be too offensive. And I think that was the idea with the hair smelling and the groping allegations, that there's nothing offensive about the guy. We have a president who grabs women by a body part that I'm not even going to say on the air, or at least he says he would, that he's not been faithful, despite, I mean, how beautiful certainly this current wife is and how glamorous at least one of his previous wives was. I'm not sure about the other one. So despite the...
Yeah, I wanted to mention, by the way, Melania just turned 49, and in June, Trump will be 73. I don't think I actually put it together to realize he's 24 years older. That's a big difference.
Yeah, we'll wish the lovely Melania a happy birthday, because that did occur recently. But there are things about Donald Trump that even his supporters say, well, they didn't vote for him because he's a saint. It's because they wanted a change. They like his street smarts. They like his stand on the issues, etc. Biden, it's like he's just not offensive. So he does or was accused of something which could be offensive. Who knows if he even did it? A picture, I mean, who knows? It's a camera angle. It's can be interpreted in many ways. It's like, okay, suddenly he likes to smell hair, and I'm guilty. I'm as guilty as anybody of joking about it and just talking about who's got the best smelling hair, talking about Cory Booker and Jeff Bezos, who don't have any hair, and Joe wouldn't want to smell their hair. So
Talk about Cory Booker. He really doesn't seem to be going anywhere at this point. He's not getting much traction at all, you know?
Yeah, I'm not a fan, so that's good enough for me. He would be on my definitely would not vote for a list. We'll put it that way. But again, Warren, I would consider. Klobuchar, I don't think she's a serious candidate. Yeah, Mayor Pete, I certainly have a liking for, but who knows? And Joe, well, why not? I mean, he was VP for 8 years, and I think he was a good VP. He's likable. He's smart. He knows the system. I have no problem with the guy, though he'll be, you know, 95 years old when he's president, but that's okay. He certainly looks healthy.
78 to 86, 8 years, because he'd be 78 and 2 months old on inauguration day, yes.
So,
he'd be 14 months older. He'd be 80 by September of 2021. After 8 months, he'd be 80. At least Joe would have to wait a year and 10 months to be 80.
And we'll kind of use that as a radio term called segue, where you kind of transition smoothly from one thing to another, like a song to a commercial, for example. We'll use that as a segue into a recent statement made by our beloved President Donald J. Trump that he's, 72 years old, but he's a vibrant young man. One meme that I saw, Ron, and I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to say this without laughing. It showed the photo of Obama, who was rather buff. I mean, it showed him without his shirt, kind of walking along, you know, wearing nothing but a pair of shorts and shoes. And, you know, again, he's
in office. You mean, right?
Yeah, or yeah, right that time. But I mean, Obama was
around.
Obama was
47. He was that age group, 47 to 55.
Yeah, Obama was in pretty good shape. Next to a picture of Donald Trump.
He is.
Yeah, Donald Trump. You know, sitting on his golf cart with his gut and his butt hanging out. I guess you can say that. And it's like vibrant. It said vibrant young man.
And Joe Biden actually is slim. He looks in pretty good shape for a man his age at 76.
So, yes, I'm not sure even Donald Trump would say that he's in better shape or more vibrant than Obama. First of all, he's more than a generation. Well, actually, not quite a generation older, because that picture was that picture was from several years ago. But he's, you know.
But he's about 19 years difference from Obama's age. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's almost a generation
57
older.
57 and 72.
But he does say, you know, I would say in general, Trump is a young 72. Is however, saying he's a vibrant young man, that is stretching it. And I think he gave himself
he stretches everything.
a little too much credit. Now, I would say, you know, for someone who doesn't seem to exercise a lot, eats a lot of fast food, doesn't really get a lot of sleep, and the presidency is a stressful job that ages you anyway, I think, relatively speaking, he is in good shape. But saying he's a vibrant young man, you know, especially looking at the physical condition of some other president, Carter also, Gerald Ford, George W. Bush were all athletic, and you know, Gerald Ford was a star football player. George W. Bush, rather athletic. Obama, again, in good shape in general. I think comparing him to those presidents, even though he is older, that's a bit of a stretch. But, you know, relative basis for someone, Ron, again, who doesn't seem to exercise a lot, is under a lot of stress, doesn't seem to do anything at night but tweet rather than sleep. Despite his beautiful wife, you would think he'd want to have good night's sleep with Melania next to him. But instead, it seems like all he does at 2 or 3 in the morning is tweet. And he does talk about proudly about all the fast food that he eats. I think he's in decent shape. However, it could catch up with him. And I think he does need to pay more attention to his health.
And trouble.
Yeah, and not, you know, maybe not talk about being vibrant and young, just kind of prove it. I don't know, but it was kind of funny.
Likes hyperbole. That's the cell president.
Yeah, I mean, it is relative. I mean, he's vibrant and young compared to some people, but I would say not really on an absolute basis. And again, it's something to giggle about. I don't think it's a reason to malign President Trump, but it certainly is.
Yeah, I want to remind you, though, that he is the third heaviest president. We know that. The only ones heavier are William Howard Taft and Grover Cleveland. He is definitely overweight, without a doubt.
He's one of the tallest, but yeah, he's not a picture of health, especially compared to Obama and George W. Bush. They were very very healthy and athletic looking, and still are. And Trump,
and yet, I want to remind you, George W. Bush had a stent put in. You remember that?
He
did have a heart issue a few years ago.
And Clinton, he gained some weight.
Clinton had heart surgery, bypass. Yes.
But he's lost some weight now and looks a lot better. So maybe Donald Trump should take some lessons from them and understand that the presidency is a tough job that seems to age you. We've talked about Jimmy Carter, how literally it seemed like he went from looking like he was 40 to looking like he was 70 during a four-year administration.
Now he looks like 70 and he's 94.
It affects people in different ways. And, you know, Obama, they joke about his hair, that it just got grayer. Well, I'm not sure if he was dyeing his hair, and I really don't care. I don't think that's even a big deal. It's not unusual. In fact, you would expect a man in his 40s when Obama took office to have gray hair, and it's like, well, the gray kind of came and went. Well, I really don't care. I don't think Obama really in the face aged much, though, in 8 years compared to Carter and some other presidents. And it just affects presidents in different ways. And with Donald Trump in the second half of his first term, which may or may not be his last term, we'll just see if it ages him and what his health is like. But it seems like...
But it is interesting about Carter that he aged a lot, but all these years he hasn't aged much more. He does look a lot younger than his age, so he seems to have stopped aging.
It literally does seem like he aged more between early 1977, early 1981 than he has from...
And ever since.
1981 to 2019. I would agree. It's Carter is just so unique in so many different ways. I just would never... Ron, I would have never thought that I'd be sitting here... almost 40 years after the end of his presidency, talking about him being
the longest-lived president,
longest-lived president.
October 1st, he'll be 95, and October 17th, his marriage will be longer than the Bushes.
I mean, it's not surprising that he's an elder statesman and someone we look up to as a man of high ethics after his presidency, because that's what he was in office. Is anything, he was too nice. There just are some lines of work where you really can't be too nice.
And I want to remind you, Carter has never been accused of sexual harassment when H.W. Bush was, in the last year or two of his life, accused of it, even later in life. So it is interesting that you cannot have any claim about Carter ever doing anything other than having lust in his heart in that Playboy interview when he was running in 1976.
Carter just is a unique individual and a good man. Again, I'm not a fan of him. In terms of what happened during his presidency, some of the stuff, he wasn't really at fault. But as we've talked about, any national events that occur during the president's
blamed if it goes term, badly, you're giving grace if it goes well. Yes.
Yeah, it's that president is a victor or a benefactor of circumstance. Donald Trump, with a good economy, decent gas prices, and other things that I think are good, but there are things that are bad. Carter, again, the energy crisis, the long lines at the gas pump, the 20% inflation and interest rates. He certainly... He's not innocent, but I wouldn't put all the blame on him. I would certainly put some.
I must say, if Gerald Ford had beaten him, I think the same thing would have happened with the inflation and the high gas prices because of the Arab oil embargo, and Ford would look worse than he does. It was better off if he didn't have a full term, if you look at it that way.
Maybe it was a blessing in disguise. I would agree.
Yes.
I would say quite possibly. And, you know, did Ford want to be president? That's always a question. He was never elected directly. He was appointed after his predecessor, Mr. Agnew, resigned. He was happy to be vice president, then he kind of jumped right into president. And did he want the job? It's kind of hard to say.
He looked now a lot better than at the time. Like it usually happens, he's more highly regarded now than he was when he was in office. But that's not uncommon.
Yeah. Do you think even George Bush number one, who recently passed away, do you think he's continuing to move up in the rankings? It seems like you have somewhat of an affection for him. Understand.
Yes. Well, I think he's moved up a bit, but unfortunately, as I wrote in my article on History News Network, he's stuck between Reagan and Clinton, two charismatic leaders. So although he's all right, he's always rated lower than the two of them. It's always a problem when you're a president between two that are stars. If you're a president between two who are not, like Obama between Bush 2 and of course, Trump, then you look a lot better. So it's all depending on where you are.
Yeah,
on the
as we
of president.
Talked about so last no week, it depends. It's relative, just like with music. There are songs that were stuck at number two because maybe a song from a Michael Jackson Thriller song was at number one and just ruled the world for a month or two, whereas in a week or week, literally week or week, different. Those are homonyms, of course. A song might hit number one because there wasn't a lot of competition. And the same thing with rankings of politicians, not to mention elections and who would be the candidate. For example, John Kerry was thought of as a weak Democratic candidate and causing his loss but just kind of depends.
Yeah, I look back at that election, 2004, and wonder if Howard Dean had not shrieked after that Iowa caucus, which Selleck destroyed him. I wonder if he could have gone all the way. Could he have won? I don't think he would have, but I always wonder, because people make one blunder and that kills them, like Howard Dean in 2004, and there's other cases like that. So you just wonder how things could have been different. You could have the what-ifs of history,
yeah,
you know.
Every election, Ron, as we talk about every show, and is partially the theme of your book that we talk about, of course, it's a bunch of what-ifs and prognostications.
Well, it's true, because there were those people who were vice president who could have become president but didn't. But if they had, in different circumstances, or different people then came in, like Andrew Johnson could have been, could have not been there, and Hannibal Hamlin, who was the first-term vice president of Lincoln, would have been, I think the history of the country would have been better in the Reconstruction years. But it's always a what-if, you know. There's no way to know what would have really happened.
Of course, in every episode of this show, we talk about presidential statistics and demographics, and as we said earlier, prognostication. So let's turn to Ron's blog from Friday, April 26th, age range of Democratic presidential candidates. We talked earlier, this election, it will be the most diverse range of age, because Pete Buttigieg, again, still in his 30s. He wouldn't even be 40 at inauguration if he were to win.
And neither would Tulsi Gabbard or Eric Swalwell. They would also be under 40. Yes.
Sanders and Biden, who are pushing 80, and a few that are in the middle. So the Washington Post has done a study of the age range of all 20 Democratic presidential candidates. Half are under 50, half are 50 to 77. Four are 40 or lower, and six are between 40 and 50. Of course, all 20 Democrats will be 2 years older when the inauguration comes. Interestingly, both Bernie and Joe Biden are in the lead in the polls, despite their age, while two women, Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren, between 50 and 70, are right behind them. And Beto O'Rourke is in his 40s, also competing in one of the four below 40. Pete Buttigieg also doing well at this point. So definitely a diversity in age, and we take a look at that. As I said, will Mayor Pete's intelligence overcome his lack of experience and his age? We shall see. He's a smart cookie.
What would be
for
interesting
sure.
is, let's say he ended up as vice president with almost anyone who's in the lead who would be 20 or more years older than him. Could be his mother or father. That's what's really odd. I think we're likely, if we have an older nominee for president, have a very young running mate.
He wrote also on Wednesday a similar topic, the ultimate age battle looking more likely to occur. Late 70s male, Biden or Sanders, versus millennial male, Buttigieg. Biden would be 78 and one-sixth on Inauguration Day. Sanders, 79 and one-third on Inauguration Day. And Buttigieg, 39 years and 1 day on Inauguration Day. And Biden and Sanders are actually older than baby boomers. I think they call that the great generation, because they're about my dad.
Twice the age of Buttigieg, yeah.
Yeah, about my dad's age. And Buttigieg, an older millennial. So definitely a big difference there. And we had presidents born in 1946, Bush number two, Clinton, and the Donald, and Barack Obama born in August of 1961. So it's almost like if we were to elect Biden or, God forbid, elect Sanders, we'd be going kind of the other direction in the generation that is used to denote the age of the president. So that would be kind of interesting, wouldn't it?
I don't see it happening, honestly, though. I don't see Sanders being the nominee. I just don't.
And let's hope that isn't the case. And that will be my.
But then at the same time, three millennials, 82 for Buttigieg, 81 for Tulsi Gabbard, and 1980 for Eric Swalwell from California. They all are technically millennials, so that could be really amazing difference of age, you know, if one of those got in. And at the moment, Pete's the one that looks like the most likely, if at all.
We are speaking to Dr. Ron Fineman on a fine-er mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, with me, Adam Lepp, host with the most, talking politics and current events, the upcoming election, and whatever else might be on our minds, we encourage you to, read and bookmark theprogressiveprofessor.com, Dr. Feynman's blog, which he's been publishing for almost 11 years about current events. His opinion, often from a left perspective, but not necessarily. Some are more nonpartisan type opinions on current events. And again, lots of prognostications on the election and whatever else is going to occur. You wrote about Social Security, Ron, on Tuesday of last week. Social Security reform needed again, as in 1983, between Speaker of the House Thomas Tip O'Neill and President Ronald Wilson Reagan. In 1983, back when Pete Buttigieg was still wearing Pampers. How about that?
He was 1 year old.
Democratic speaker, and he probably spoke a couple languages back then too. He could probably say gaga googie in a couple different languages because he was just such a smart little pea. You don't hear much about it. You don't hear much about his biology. You hear about Chasten, of course, his husband. You don't really hear much about his biological family. His parents can't really, hate to say, they probably aren't much older than I am.
His father died recently, that I know. His mother's still around, but his father died, I think, right before he announced, or just a few months ago, But not much, but we'll hear more about him as time goes on,
Yeah, it just was kind of interesting, because he is younger, you would expect him to have a lot, the biological relatives, and, I don't know, does he have brothers and sisters? I'm not quite sure. He's a native of South Bend. He lives in the same neighborhood that he grew up in.
Yeah, but in theory, he's 37. His father could have been 18, in theory, when he was born. Some people are. So literally, you at your age, you could be his father.
Well, that would certainly be interesting. I thought it was kind of cool that, I very recently, one Bush was father of President Bush, to think, that I would be old enough to be the father of the president. That's interesting and scary, kind of crazy.
Yeah.
All that. All at the same time.
So also Pete Buttigieg and even Swalwell and Gabbard are born after my oldest son David. So they're older than him. I mean, they're younger than him. I'm sorry to say they're younger than him. And so that's fascinating in itself.
Pete's father just passed away. Actually, three months ago. It's very sad.
Yeah, bad.
He was a Joseph Buttigieg Notre Dame professor. Pete is an only child. So
that's an interesting angle to look at. How many presidents have been only children? I know Franklin D. Roosevelt was an only child. I'm not really sure. That's an interesting angle to look at. How many were only child?
But yeah, FDR just was an only just child. Ironic. Again, being younger, you think, okay, he'd have, even his grandparents could possibly still be alive. But his dad just passed away. He's an only child. So that's unique about the guy. Here, a lot about his husband, and certainly the first male presidential candidate to have a husband. But you don't hear much about his biological family. Again, his dad, only 71 years old. He was a Notre Dame professor. So very sad.
Yes, sad, yeah.
I guess we'll learn more about cousins, et cetera. But being a native of the area, South Bend not being that far from Marion, just one state over. So maybe we'll find out more about that and kind of learn more about what makes the guy tick is –
He's also from a red state, Indiana, which is interesting. If he ran, could he win Indiana, which nobody would think he could win, but maybe he would.
So anyway,
let's say he was the vice presidential candidate, he would be debating Mike Pence from the same state, and they've had their own little differences already.
That would be one. I'd like to be a spot on the wall during that event. So we were digressing, Ron. You wrote again last Tuesday. Social Security reform needed, again, as in 1983, between Speaker O'Neill and President Reagan. Again, we mentioned it in 83. Pete Buttigieg could probably say gaga googie and other baby talk phrases in two or three different languages because he was just so smart.
He probably said Google before we had Google, the company.
That would be a good point to ponder, wouldn't it? Well, anyway, in 1983, kind of crazy, it was 36 years ago, Democratic Speaker of the House, Thomas Tip O'Neill, a clear-cut liberal, negotiated with conservative Republican President Ronald Reagan a path-breaking Social Security reform, raising the level of taxation on Social Security, increasing the retirement age by stages to 66 and 67. So you're saying, Ron, that we need to reform that, that the system is a bit...
Unfortunately, I think we're going to need it because they're saying there's a shortfall coming, and I think we have to raise the amount that's taxed and also make the, for the future recipients, like 20, 25 years down the road, as was happened to me when I found out in 83, you know, this, I knew, oh, I can't retire at 65, I'd have to be at least 66 to get full benefits. So as long as you give 25 years notice, I guess, to like 2045, you would tell people who would be reaching that age then that they would have to be either 68 or 69, but they would have plenty of notice. It's not like it's short-term notice. It's the same kind of a thing as what happened between O'Neill and Reagan.
So you're saying the system is a bit antiquated, and we need to modify
it. Because more and more people are retiring, and unfortunately we're having fewer younger people, which is a problem too, and that's why immigration helps increase and create more workers and younger ages of the population. So it's important, you know, that we have more immigration, of course legal, I'm not saying, but certainly legal, and that we also start to plan for the future of Social Security as well as Medicare.
Yeah, well, things evolve, and again, people are living longer, and we're seeing older presidential candidates, again, men who are more than 10 years past what we traditionally think of the retirement age of 65, that Sanders and Biden, again, pushing 80. They want to run.
One thing I got to say is, will they, if they get in, either of them, could they really be expected to live 8 years and have two terms? I wonder, because they'll be in their mid-80s, so you wonder, what are the odds that they would not survive their time in office? That's a worry, I think. And that makes the vice president even more important, it really matters, you know.
We're just seeing men wanting to run for one of the most stressful, important jobs, the leader of the free world, more than 10 years past the traditional retirement age. So people say, you know, 70 is the new 50. Well, maybe it is. We're seeing some differences there. Yet, you know, ironically, we had one of our youngest presidents, Obama, the preceding, who is now our oldest president, Trump, and a man who could be our youngest president ever, the only president ever to be in his 30s. So definitely some ironies, some trends, and just things that change as the world evolves and what it means to be a certain age, how that changes from year to year and election to election. We'll close out the show, Ron. Last Monday, you wrote about something we've talked about many times, the change in the Republican Party that, again, Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt, who we've kind of decided they have philosophies somewhat similar to mine. They are old school Republicans, nothing like the current Republicans. And you're saying, you wrote from Barry Goldwater and Hugh Scott to Mitt Romney and Mitch McConnell, the loss of Republican principle. 45 years ago, there were distinguished Republican senators who stood up for principle and pressured President Nixon to resign for his abuse of power in the Watergate scandal, including Barry Goldwater, Hugh Scott of Pennsylvania. Now, 45 years later, let's move the clock forward. We have Republican senators who on the surface are principled and unhappy about the abuse of power of the Donald, but beyond words will not take action to inform Donald Trump that his time is up. So a lot of lip service to the state of the Trump presidency. And why is that? Does Donald Trump intimidate these people? Are they afraid of the guy? They just don't have
it
any...
It seems that way. I don't really know why, but the thing that still bothers me is these people worry more about keeping their job, and I understand everybody wants to keep their job in life, but honestly, if these people were to lose their seat, they're not going to be in trouble, they're not going to be homeless, they have plenty of money, they already have been in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, I don't really understand why they don't feel that principle matters more than just holding on to a job and showing you're totally hypocritical, but they just seem to want to keep their job, and they willing to accept anything that goes on, and that's not what was true back in the 1970s. It was a very different attitude.
Yeah, in any job, Ron, you have to, how do you say this, kiss a few butts, even if they're smelly butts, in order to keep your job.
And oh,
I mean, that's true, though. It's unfortunate because in politics, you really shouldn't have to in politics. But it seems like the landscape has changed. Would that be a reasonable assertion, or is there more to it than that?
I don't know, but I think the Republican Party is not going to look good in the future, and I think it's going to basically collapse of its own weight because of its lack of principle and allowing all kinds of abuses to go on. I don't think it's going to be good in the long run of history.
So it's necessary, then, to go ahead and stand up for what you believe, even if it means...
I believe that, yes. And but not everybody apparently does, so that's the problem. You know,
and
that
I
we might have
seen that in someone we admire, Nikki Haley, that she couldn't deal with it anymore, and so she resigned. Maybe that's... We need more people doing stuff like that. Maybe that's part of what we need.
You remember last September, there was this article by Anonymous that was critical of Trump, and they never found out who Anonymous was. And I thought at the time it was either Nikki Haley or possibly the ambassador to Russia, John Huntsman, who's still there. But I'm sure he does not like what's going on, but he's staying on. Maybe he feels he needs to, not so much because he needs a job, but because of U.S.-Russian relations. I don't know what he's thinking. But
yeah.
I think it could have been one of those two that was the actual author of Anonymous.
Yeah, I never quite know, and that just adds to the fun. Does it make Donald Trump...
Someday we'll know. I'm sure one day somebody will admit it.
Does it make
found out.
Donald Trump a strong leader or just an intimidator? Kind of hard to say. Well, we'll leave that up for opinion. That's part of the fun of politics. Form your opinions, hear what we have to say, and if you want to swear at the radio, throw things at the radio, or say, well, these guys are really smart, that's fine, too. And that concludes another episode of A Finer Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the Professor. Time flies as it always does. Thank you, Ron, for being with us. Another fine, fine program.
As we thank you very much. I had a great time as usual.
Talk presidential history and prognostications and Joe Biden throwing his hat in the ring. And I'm sure we will have more topics and more potential presidents when we talk next time. Have a great rest of...
He had one point. Teddy Roosevelt, when he announced he was running on, running against Taft in 1912, he actually had a boxing ring, and he threw his hat into the ring, and that's where we got the line, my hat is in the ring, that whole concept that people use.
And that's why I like Teddy Roosevelt so much. He had a sense of humor, and he was a punster, and didn't take himself too seriously. What a great man. I hope he's in heaven
he
there smiling.
Thanks again.
Knowing how much I admire him. Again, a smart guy, too. Wasn't afraid to go against the grain, too. And maybe we need more of that. So thank you again.
If he was alive today, he'd be on Twitter and he'd be critical of Trump. I'm certain of it.
That would certainly be an interesting Twitter account to follow, wouldn't it? And thanks again, Ron, for being with us on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.